Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today we're going to, today is part two on the Q&A with Jeff Rappaport on creative financing for beginners. So I'm going to start out with kind of the last question I asked on part one of this. And this is on episode number 9. This is going to be episode number 10. So part two is episode number 10. So Jeff, the last question I asked you on part one was, what's the best way you have found to sell your prospective seller on creative financing solutions?
So we were talking about an example of getting a couple of that we're dealing with. We just got a contract yesterday on a seller on short-term financing, and that our acquisition manager is working on that right now as we speak. So one of the things that you want to know in terms of talking to the seller and showing them the benefits is that, well, one, they get more money. So
that's always good.
Yeah. So
that's definitely a great way to sell them.
So, and there may be an interest. So not only are they getting a higher price, but then they're potentially getting interest on their money. And we're also talking really short term. So in this case, we're talking 3 months to 6 months, maybe a year or less. And sometimes that term really matters to them. So you've got to be clear on what's your exit strategy. And
right. How.
So if you're going to rehab this house, you know, you better plan a little more like, hey, I'm going to rehab it in 3 weeks. I'll probably have it sold in 2, and then we'll close in 30 days. I only need really like 10 weeks.
So before you can sell them on anything, you have to know absolutely what you're going to do with the property.
Yeah, you want to have your exit strategy mapped out. And hey, worst case scenario, what happens if you don't get it done? So
you
could go back.
Extension.
You could certainly go back and
maybe
ask
pay them a little more money for that extension.
Yep. That's one of the great things about owner financing is that you're dealing with a human being, and you go and try to work things out.
And almost everything is negotiable.
That's right. So one of the ways that you...
And really, they're on your side. I just wanted to add that. They're on your side because they want to get this done too.
It's so, kind of like you form like an
alliance.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great word. It really makes more sense to work together rather than as adversaries on this. So
it could be a whole episode in itself.
It probably could.
Forming an alliance with your seller.
It probably could. So really, this particular offer, the really short term, is not a hard sell.
Right. Because it is short term.
Yes.
You're saying, look, we can give you more cash.
And really, that's what it comes down to, is how secure do they feel? So if they feel like you have enough money in it and that you'll do what you say you're going to do, most people will be open to it. And that's usually the objection is, hey, I can wait 3 months, 4 months, 6 months. That's not the issue. The issue is I'm not really believing you, and you're only giving me $8,000. I'd like you to have more in the game. I mean, and maybe that's a deal breaker for you, or maybe it's not. It depends. And I don't normally just, at least I don't teach. I wouldn't normally just give in and say, sure, I'll give you $15,000 instead of $8,000. My question would be is, what's your concern?
Great question.
What's the issue that you're having? I mean,
you
do realize I'm writing a check for $8,000. What's the concern that you're having?
Yeah.
Rather than me just say, oh, sure, let's do this or
that. So you're trying to isolate their objection so that you can address that.
Correct. Yeah.
Love
it. But really it's more about just, So it's not like, don't worry, we're going to do contract for deed. And, you know, so it might be, hey, you're going to remain on title.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you $8,000. You're going to remain on title and you're going to be protected that way. And if I was to default, you could actually get this property back in like a 30 to 60 day period of time. What other concerns do you have? I mean, I'm securing you.
Yeah, and really what you're doing here is you're bringing their certainty to a level 10. 10 being they are absolutely certain and they're ready to pull the
trigger. They're very comfortable.
Yeah. And you have to do that in sailing. There's a very good book by Jordan Belford on that. But he talks about bringing your prospect to a level 10 on the certainty scale of your product, of you, and of your company. And that's kind of the three tens that he talks about in that book. But he's the real Wolf of Wall Street. I don't know if you...
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't even know that.
So Jordan Belford, there's a movie called The Wolf of Wall Street, where Leonardo DiCaprio played Jordan Belford. They kind of Hollywoodized it, I would say. But he has a great selling program that he's created. He calls it the straight line selling program, I think.
Well, there's certainly a ton of sales information.
Straight line
out
sales
there.
System, yeah. But anyway, it talks about bringing them to a level 10 certainty, and that's what you're doing. So that's why I wanted to bring that up, because you're isolating their objections and you're handling their objections, which when you handle their objections, you're stepping them up that certainty ladder so that they will, you know, be at an 8 or 9 or a 10. Like you use the word comfortable, but, you know, you're just giving them certainty. So the more certain they feel in their mind about the solution or the offer, about you and about your company, they're going to do business with you.
And really, you'd be surprised. It's not normally overcoming objections. It's more about explaining it in a way where you're not going so detailed, where you're trying to educate them.
Yeah.
But you're just showing them how it's going to work and why it's going to be of benefit to them, and that, hey, we're going to get this done. And the simpler that is, the less objections you're going to have anyway. But it's not really... You should be prepared for certain objections, but it's really more about setting, again, that kind of that agenda about how this is going to all work, why it's a benefit to them, and why they should work with us.
Awesome. Love it. Okay, so my next question, how do you know when to use a contract for deed versus a lease option versus an all-inclusive trust deed?
So there's not really a right answer for that unless you live in a particular area where one is more traditional or one is less traditional. And I'll give you an example. So one of the markets that we work in is Idaho. And we have done a couple of contract for deed deals there. However, they don't really like them. And it is an uphill battle every time that we do it. So I have a choice. My choice is I can keep offering my sellers contract for deed in Idaho and have fights all along the way until they say, no more, I'm not going to do this anymore with you. And this isn't just one title company that I've gone to 7 or 8 or 10 or whatever. And they all tell me what I want to hear up front, but when we're actually doing
executing
it, yeah, it's a little different story.
That's when they get cold feet.
So I can tell you, so right now, my offers in Idaho aren't contract for deed. They would be all-inclusive trust deed or just a trust deed and note.
Have you told your title company here to get a license up there so you can do the same
thing? I have.
What do they say to that?
They say no. In Washington, which is a newer market for us, they're claiming that they will all do contract for deed. But we have yet to do one, so we will find out when the time is right.
Okay.
So my preference is...
So it depends on the state you're in, number one.
Well, that first of all, which strategy is understood and allowed, because not every title company will close every type of transaction. So you should know what the particular title company you're going to be using, what they're comfortable in doing.
Okay.
Okay. Second would be, for me, is that this is just where we live. These are the markets that we work in. It could be different in your market.
Right.
On a lease option, we can expect to get 3 to 5% as an option deposit. So if we're dealing with a $400,000 home, we can expect to get somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000 up front. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
That's not to say that sometimes we can't get more.
Yep.
But that's the expectation going in.
Okay.
On contract for deed or all-inclusive, not only will we get 40 plus thousand, we probably get more like 50 to 60,000. So
dollars down.
Dollars down.
Because the title is transferring.
Or not, depending on if we're doing it as contract for deed. So one of the things that I look at is with lease option, how much of that 10 to 20,000 do I want to offer the seller? Well, if they're renting this property for 2,500, that's probably the least that they would take, is they want like that security deposit. So I'm giving that to the seller. I can offer the seller considerably more money up front doing contract for deed or all inclusive because I can get $40,000 to $60,000 down. So what if I offered them 30, 35? That's pretty good. That's almost 10%, right? And the balance is what we make, so that's not bad for us. So I like, if I had like a hierarchy, I like contract for deed and all inclusive. They're kind of side by side and I use them
interchangeably almost.
Well, contract for deed is going to be easier to convince the seller because it protects the seller more. So absolutely, I can get those accepted a lot more than you're going to transfer title. And if there's a default, you're going to have to foreclose and it may take you, in our states, 4 months or more to get the property back. So that I love that one. And to me, they're equal, but I can get contract for deed accepted more than I can all-inclusive.
Right.
Then there's lease option. Lease option is my fallback for me. And okay, that doesn't mean it's not good, but I like that I can get a lot more money up front. And I can offer a portion of that to the seller.
Absolutely. Okay. So great. I love the way you answered that. So kind of depends on the state and then, you know, what the seller wants in essence too.
Well, yeah. And you can certainly offer both options. So, and that's certainly what we've done. And we don't do it consistently anymore. But yeah. One of the other things, too, would be is I have no problem dealing with owner financing on a lower price type property. So right now, the median price range in Salt Lake County is $340,000. So if we had a $250,000 property, that is not one I want a lease option.
Right.
Think about 3 to 5%. You know, you're going to get $6,000, $7,000 to maybe $10,000. If you're giving a portion of that, it's like, that's not where I want to be.
Yeah.
I can still get $20,000, $30,000 from a buyer on owner financing. But if we're dealing in a higher price, so like a $400,000, then I don't mind the lease option. And actually, we just got a lead yesterday that it's a $450,000, I think, for something. And a lease option would be great. They just did a 1031 into this. They would like to do this. We could probably show them how we can set up a lease option. It won't make sense for them to sell it. But because it's a higher price range, I bet we can get 15 or 20, pay them a little bit. Now it makes it worthwhile.
Right.
So I also look at how much money will we make.
Okay. Well, this question kind of leads into my next question, which is what are the three offers you always send to sellers? And how do you work backwards to get those offers? I know that's kind of a more in-depth question
than
the second part. But if you could just answer the first part, what are the three offers you always send to sellers? And I know you don't always send them three. Like you talked about, you only send the one seller two offers of cash and a all-inclusive for 6 months, right?
So right now, one of the things that I would tell you is that we don't have set offers that we send like to every seller. So we may get to that point. If we were generating enough leads and it was really just a numbers game, we might have, hey, here's a principal-only offer. Here's an interest-only offer. here's a cash offer. Or
is that something you guys are working towards, doing it like that, kind of in a systematic
way? I don't know yet. Certainly, we want to systemize it a little more because the underwriting part takes me a good amount of time, and we want to be able to build and do more deals. So there is a component that we're trying to look at that will help with generating those LOIs. Right now, though, what we look at is what the seller situation is, what the facts are, so what's owed, what's what the monthly payment is, what the seller wants, what the seller needs, and then we try to structure stuff around that. So depending on what those situations are, there may be two different owner financing offers, one like market value or more, lower interest rate.
Do you always send a cash offer? Can I ask you that?
I would say 95% of the time we send a cash offer.
Cash offer along with, you know, one, two, or three other.
But sometimes the cash offer would only be insulting. And so what we may do is not make that cash offer. We make that short-term owner financing offer. So, you know, a six-month, like, here's some money down. We'll make a payment and you'll get a balloon payment in this amount of time. Even yesterday, I think there was a lead yesterday that I looked at the LOI and there was no cash offer. It's not a usual thing, but it happens on occasion.
Okay, so basically your answer is it's not black and white.
I would say that a lot of times it'll be some kind of financing. If I was just starting out, it might be a lease option and a cash offer.
Okay.
Or it might be an owner finance, a lease option, and a cash offer.
Okay.
As you get a little more versed in creative financing, you can look at the different kinds of ways. I mean, I have things where, hey, here's one that's above market price, what you're asking. Here's one just under market price. Here's one for 3 years. Here's one for 7 years. Tell me what's most interesting to you and let's work on that route.
Very good. I love that point right there. Just like what's most interesting to you, Mr. Seller?
You're trying to play with some of the variables to see where their hot buttons are. So like I said, a lot of the times it's the price. So, but I try to make them different enough that, and remember, they still got to work for us. I mean, just because, now, I can't just make these all one-sided where they work. I want to get them accepted, but they still got to work for us.
Absolutely. You still have to be able to make money on them. So let me ask you this then. If a beginner wanted to make just one creative financing offer along with their cash offer, what would you recommend that be? Would you recommend that be the lease offer?
I would.
Until just because it's simplistic, right?
Yeah, it's very simple. So your cash offer – so let's use an example. So let's say we had a $400,000 home that was in good shape, not maybe pristine. They were asking $360,000 for it. I mean, your cash offer as a wholesaler is going to be in the twos, right?
Right.
So chances of you getting that aren't very good. But if the property is in rentable condition, you could go in and offer that $360,000, $370,000, maybe even a little bit more than they're asking, with a pretty good rent, a 2 year term, a 3 year term, something like that. I don't typically like going less than 2 years, by the way, but something like that. I usually offer like 2 years with the right to extend it for a third year. But you've got a pretty nice house, a $400,000 home that you can get a good option deposit on. It's in good shape, maybe not great shape, but it's certainly rentable. And if you worked out the rent so it reflected that, I mean, that's a slam dunk all the time. So now you have two options. My really lowball offer that you'd probably get either no call back or a call saying, how dare you insult me with something like that. Or you say, that actual lease option intrigues me. So now they're not so mad about your cash offer. You've given them another option that's, I mean, it may be $60,000 difference between the two.
Right. Okay. What about people who are like in the Midwest markets?
Uh-huh.
Where, you know, the house prices are a lot lower.
Yeah.
What would you recommend there? Would you recommend them still do, you know, lease options? Because you said on a 250, you know, 200.
Now, I don't think you want to do a lease option on a $40,000, $50,000 home. Okay. But first thing first is find out what's done in your area. So what's, you know, contract for deed, land contracts, all of those kinds of deals. So what's most accepted? And on those kinds of deals, I think I would offer one of two offers. Principal only payments. So, hey, I'll pay you $45,000 for your property. I'll give you $3,000 down, and I'll pay you $400 a month until it's paid. Or there's a balloon, and all $400 is going toward principal each month. So every month that you make a payment, your principal is being reduced by $400. Or interest only. So $40,000, I'll pay you a ridiculously high rate. I'll pay you 6%. And if you go back to the calculator class, very simple calculation to do.
Right.
Figure out, hey, but I'm going to extend that out because now I'm looking at the cash flow every month rather than, because I'm getting no principal pay down. So, you know, I want to create a good cash flow for myself. That might be enticing because they're maintaining their equity in the property for however long the term is.
Right. So you're saying in markets like that, you would just offer them some alternative solutions, but are still simple. Like
very simple.
Yeah, principal only or interest only. Okay.
Yeah. Great. I think as you get into more higher price type, that you're not going to – and I shouldn't say this. I mean, you can get principal only payments accepted. But you're going to have to offer more. You're going to have to find the right motivated seller. In my mind, you can get more accepted if you offer a lower interest rate and just show that there is, you know, you're selling the property for $400, but over the course of 3 years, you're actually going to make $417,000 or whatever it's going to be.
Right, right. Okay. So what are the key pieces of information you need to make these creative financing offers? Just a bullet point. I'm going to write.
We kind of talked about this already.
Yeah,
in our phone calls.
Yeah.
Yep.
So ARV.
Yes. We need to know what the after repaired value.
Okay.
That should not be a Zestimate or.
You actually need to pull comps and find out what similar properties are selling for in the immediate area.
That's my preference. Both Utah and Idaho are non-disclosure states. You know, depending on where you live and what you do, but something reliable. So we got to have a good idea of what your after repaired value is.
Okay.
We need to know what kind of condition the property is in and specifics. I want you or me to be able to know by, you know, a description how much money we need to allocate for repairs.
To fix that up. Yeah. Okay.
That doesn't mean that that comes into our – it's not a cash offer that we're making. So it's not necessarily that it's going to come off of like the purchase price. We just need to know what we're dealing with so we know where to price it.
Okay.
We need to know what's owed on the property. So – what's the existing debt? If it's one, trust deed or mortgage, two, you know, sometimes there's loan modifications that are silent seconds. So there's no payment or interest, but the payoff that still exists. We need to know the monthly payment, principal and interest, and does that include the taxes and insurance? And if not, we need to at least know what the taxes are running.
Okay, so monthly payment, does it include taxes and insurance?
Yep.
And if it doesn't, what are the taxes?
Correct. And you can do some of this research. I do it all the time that, you know, we'll look up on the tax records and find out what the taxes are.
Right. And that's really easy to do. You just go to your local
tax assessor.
County assessor. Yep. You can look it up that way. It's all public information.
Yep.
Okay, so
that's primarily, and then any kind of information in terms of needs, wants, motivation from the seller. So we have an idea of how to structure what we're doing.
Motivation or what the seller wants.
Yep. And there might be one more thing that I would add. We probably should have added this to our phone call list, but
okay.
If it's rented, what's it rented for? And how long is the lease?
Is it rented? If so, how long? And what's the rent?
Yep.
Okay. I'm just taking these down because I will be adding these to our phone number.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that'll help. Our voicemail when people call in.
Well, one of the things that I do when I'm analyzing these deals is that if it's already rented, you know, and we've talked about this in a previous episode, a lot of times people, I talked to someone yesterday. This is exactly what he told me. Jeff, I'm not a very good landlord. I don't like doing the property management. And it wasn't about the fixing. It's about dealing with the tenants and collecting their rents.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's stories, stuff like that happens. And he's very sympathetic. So he's like, yeah, one of them's a little slow pay of a tenant. But I haven't raised the rents in like 5 years because I'd rather not have a vacancy. I don't want to deal with trying to find someone else if I don't have to. So one of the things is we want to know what the rents are now and what potentially they could be. I mean, rents have risen quite a bit over the last few years.
Right.
If someone hasn't raised them in the last 3, 4, 5 years, chances are there's some room to raise them in some cases quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay, great. So just to recap the pieces of information you need, we need to know what the ARV is, after repaired value. We need to know the condition of the property and what we're looking at as far as repairs. Is it move-in ready? Do we need to drop $20,000 to get this thing move-in ready? What's owed on the property? The existing debt total. So and break that down into a first mortgage, second mortgage, et cetera. If there was a loan mod, a silent second, as you mentioned. What is that monthly payment on that debt? And does it include taxes, insurance? If not, what is that, right? And what motivation or what is it that the seller wants in this deal? What do they want to get out of it? That way we have a direction to go in. And is it rented? If so, how long? And what are the rents?
There's probably be one more question now that I think about it, is that we'd want a little more information on the underlying debt. So, you know, what kind of interest rate? Is it fixed or variable? How long of a term does it have? That kind of stuff on the, if there's an underlying debt on the property.
Okay. So if there's an underlying debt, you want to know
interest
terms.
Yeah.
Terms,
maturity date. Yeah.
So maturity, interest.
Fixed, variable.
Fixed or variable.
Yeah.
Fixed. Okay. Awesome. And guys, I wanted to go over that question kind of in depth and recap it because this is the information you guys need to be getting from your seller if you want to create some creative financing offers. And if you want to use these strategies, this is what Jeff has to know every time he does it. And so you guys need to know the same thing. Okay. So, Jeff, can you give two examples where you were able to make deals out of leads where other wholesalers approached them and made cash offers and was not able to get the deal done? Can you give us two examples where you used creative financing strategies where you came up against a competitor, another wholesaler that just threw down the cash hammer and they weren't able to get the deal done, but because you were able to structure some creative financing, you got the deal done.
So this one might not be the best example because we didn't end up getting it, but I think it'll kind of show exactly what we're dealing with. So we had a call this week on a house and we ran out. It was a PPC lead and we have quickly figured out that there's a lot of competition with PPC leads. So immediately went out, met with the seller.
Just to clarify, yeah. Sorry, PPC, guys, is pay per click.
Yes.
So that could be Google AdWords. That could even be Facebook advertising, any kind of search
Google
engine.
Google AdWords.
Okay.
Yep. So we went out right away. The house, yeah, it not bad, but needed some work. Probably needed $30,000 to $40,000 in work. And the guy was really motivated. He wanted to sell. And
okay.
he wanted cash. So our cash offer was like $253,000, something like that.
Okay.
And he was certainly considering it, but we were not able to get him to sign the contract right then and there. That was our weakness. So he got another call from another investor.
Okay.
And here's what the investor said to him over the phone. What will it take for you to just walk away from this? And he said $300,000. And the other investor said, okay, I'll give you $300,000. Now, he hadn't seen the property yet. And so the guy was like, well, I've got to see what this is all about because, you know, he offered me $300,000. So it went on for a couple of days. So we made two more offers. And the other offers were more like $273,000,
okay.
Short-term owner financing. So more like that six-month type thing that we're talking about where we'd give them some money up front, like $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, and they would carry the loan for 6 months, and then there'd be a balloon. They'd get paid off. So already we're $20,000 above where we were on our cash price.
Okay.
Then we had another one that was longer term, but he didn't want longer term. So this other investor kind of kept him around. You know, he's like, I'll be right out, but it went on for like 3 days.
Yeah, so he was just keeping him on the hook.
Correct.
Essentially.
So he came out and saw the house, and he's like, well, I can't pay you $300,000. I can pay you $257,000 or something. So he was only like $3,000-$4,000 above, and I'm sure this guy shared our offer with this other investor to see if he could beat it. And sure enough, he beat it by like $3,000-$4,000.
Okay.
However, we had another offer that was at $273,000 that beat his offer. And he would only have to wait for 6 months. And again, if we had to, we could go back and say, look, we'll make it four and we'll try to get it done in 2 to 3. However, The reason we didn't get it, and we would have, and that would have been the option he would have taken, is that because of the delay from what that other investor had done, now a friend of his, a relationship of 30 years who happens to be a realtor, came into the picture and told them, well, we could get you this much, which is, yeah, or more. And
okay.
So now that's the route he's going. But that's exactly how it would have worked, is that typically we're outbid on our cash price. If
yeah.
we're in a
just a cash.
If
cash.
There's, yeah, I mean, if we're up against a rehabber, they can pay more because we're wholesalers.
Yep.
They don't have our fee. Second, they may be able to do repair costs for even less. They
right.
may be doing some of the work themselves. Other wholesalers might be willing to take less of an assignment fee. So almost everyone is going to beat us in any kind of price bidding war.
Right.
So we lose those all the time. So the only way we get those is if we've really created a good relationship and they've decided, I'd rather give up money and go with you than the other person.
But you can offer a higher price if they're willing to
yes.
give you the terms you need.
Correct.
So in those deals, have you came up against other wholesalers where, you know, price wasn't a hot button or they wanted more money than the cash and you got the deal?
So the only time that I feel like we have the competition in terms of owner financing, which I'm sure is more than I actually know of, but my guess is that the seller has already received our LOI and has shown it to
another. So they're shopping.
Yes, they're shopping.
Okay. Interesting.
So that's where I would say that sometimes we get beat because someone sees exactly what we've structured and why, and then they've come in, well, I can do that and I'll give you this price or this much down or whatever.
Which is why it's very important to build rapport with these with people,
right? Yeah.
Because if they know, like, and trust you, they're going to do business with you, right?
Well,
as the saying goes,
yeah.
And the more rapport you build, you know, the better. Not in every case, but the better chance you have of getting that deal.
Well, you know, one of the things that we certainly don't want to burn bridges or talk bad about other investors and how they do business, but you know, we went back to this seller on this example and said, "Look, we told you up front that he was not going to pay you $300,000 because the numbers wouldn't work," and he didn't. Yeah, he kept you on the hook, and then made you an offer of, you know, considerably less than that. We were upfront with you. Not only upfront, but we came right out. We dealt, you know, we have a relationship. Our acquisition guy spent 2 hours. So it was something that, you know, we did develop that rapport.
Okay.
And that was important to us. But here was a guy that was kind of, you know, he was getting in the deal any way he could to try to see if he could secure it.
Yeah, and time kills all deals. I don't know if you've heard that, but
certainly
it
does.
Yeah, so if you know, the other guy's just prolonging it, and then, you know, this guy's still looking for a solution, and he's shopping it out, and then he finds his agent, and his agent says, "Hey, we can give you more." Well, I killed it. But anyway, Jeff, I got three more questions for you. I know we're kind of running long here. How many of your deals are cash deals versus creative financing deals, would you say?
So right now, I would say over the last maybe couple of months that it's like maybe 65 to 35,
65,
70 to 30, somewhere in that range. Terms being the higher.
Okay. So 70
cash being the lower.
Perfect. So 70% of your deals, 70% of your deals are creative financing.
Yeah. The majority.
Versus cash.
Yes.
See, I love that. That's awesome, because really that's a niche that you have in the markets you work in that other wholesalers don't, because they just don't understand this.
Well, and
for the most part, that's kind of a general statement.
Yeah, and I'm not saying people don't understand owner finance. I just don't think they use it maybe in a way that could really benefit them. And you know, we'll talk, I think, next episode about an example that. Now, I didn't know if we could sell, and I doubt many investors would have touched this, but we just closed on it and made $20,000. So,
okay.
All with terms.
We'll talk about that one on the next episode.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Okay. Jeff, where did you learn creative financing? Who were your mentors? What are the resources you would recommend people pick up?
Okay, so
aside from this podcast, which is the best information out there today,
certainly the cheapest, right?
So we're not charging for this,
not yet. The favorite one, and I shouldn't say favorite, but the one that had the most influence for me was Ron LeGrand. Still around, he's
Ron
been doing
LeGrand,
this 30 years.
Around. Okay.
You can actually YouTube him. He's not a podcast kind of guy, but
first bought his info product, right?
I bought his not his info product. I bought his three colored tiered cash flow system: ugly houses, pretty houses, and I think lease options, something like that.
Okay.
And this was back in 2000. So
okay,
but. He understands how to do terms, and he's the one that made the most sense to me.
Okay.
Since then, I have, you know, Joe McCall, if you're looking at lease options or doing...
Big shout out to Joe McCall.
If you're looking at wholesaling lease options, he's got a good program.
Yeah, and he's actually, I think he's doing, I don't know if it's up, I think it's up. I listen to Joe McCall's podcasts pretty religiously, and he's doing a podcast focused on lease options.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's calling it Lease Option Wealth or something like that. Joe, if you're listening to this, we need to get you on the show, because you've been a mentor to Jeff when it comes to wholesaling lease options.
A guy named Richard Roop. I'm not sure if he's doing anymore, but he had a great he's where it started to become more automated for me. And he had a way of doing things a little different. So it started making me think outside the box. There's a number of people. Okay. And certainly you can YouTube Bigger Pockets. I mean, great resources to find
people that focus on.
There's John Jackson, who's a lease options specialist as well, would be really good. Mitch Stevens, who does a lot of owner financing. But really what you're looking for, in my opinion, you can use this, and there's all kinds of different models. I like to use it where I'm creating financing and either selling that, wholesaling it, or using it to stay in the middle. I'm not interested in buying a property for cash and then creating financing. That's another business model, but that's not my business model.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that maybe on the next episode or the one after that, about creative buying on creative financing and then selling it on the MLS, wholetailing it, as they say. So, okay. Well, cool. So Bigger Pockets, Ron LeGrand, Richard Roop.
Richard Roop. Yep.
Google those guys, find out what they got. This is where Jeff learned his stuff. Or just keep listening to this podcast and learn like I am from
if you don't like it, you can ask Jonathan for your money back. Money back guarantee.
There is a money back guarantee for sure. Okay. So last question, Jeff. Is there a question that I have not asked that I should have?
Wow. That's quite the question. I'm not sure how to answer that, because I'm looking at it from a different perspective. So I'm not – I could come up with a ton of questions, but I think what the whole goal of this is that it was a conversation between the two of us.
Absolutely.
Where I was trying to help you understand more creative finance. So it's more about your journey rather than me. And I'm trying to fill in the blanks for you and for everyone else out there. So rather than me ask the questions, you ask the questions, and I'll do my best to answer.
I wanted to ask that because a guy by the name of Joe Polish, who's kind of a marketing genius, he runs a high-level mastermind group as well, kind of more centered around marketing. But anyway, Joe Polish, anytime he interviews anyone, he always asks, is there a question I have not asked that I should have?
And I think it's a really good question. But yeah, I probably should have prepared for that one ahead of time.
Because it's one of those things like maybe I don't know. See, I don't know what I don't know,
right?
As the saying goes. And maybe there's something that you know. It's like, well, you should have asked this. So there's a piece of information that I'm not consciously aware of, but you are. And so you say, well, this would have been a great question. Anyway.
But the good part is that this is ongoing. So if there were questions that you missed, we'll probably end up covering it somewhere down the road.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, that kind of wraps up the questions I have. Again, this was part two on Q&A with Jeff. Creative financing for beginners. I think that's what I'm going to title this one.
I don't think it's really for beginners. I think the questions that you asked are...
they're probably more advanced, but...
But
these are really good questions for beginners and really good information. I know we went long on this one. We try to keep these things somewhere around 30 to 40 minutes. We're just over that now. But guys, we set up a creative financing hotline. This is for any of our audience out there who has questions. Any of you guys, if there's something I have not asked Jeff that you would like to, it doesn't have to be deal centric. But if there's something you would like to know from Jeff, give this number a call. It's 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. That's our hotline. Right now, it'll just go to a voicemail. And please, we want to engage our audience here. We want to know what you guys want on this show, what information you're looking for, so that we can cover that. And if you guys haven't, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, and give us a review. Let us know how we're doing, because that really helps us get this show out to other people. And I think we just have been offering gold here. And Jeff is just certainly a wealth of knowledge who can help you guys do more deals if you can, you know, if you just start utilizing these strategies that he does every day in his business. So, Jeff, with that said, any last words? If they do call in, if you guys call in, we would like you to leave your name, what market you're in. It doesn't have to be your full name. We don't care either way. But your name, what market you're in, so what area you're in. And then if it's just a general question, ask your general question. If it is, hey, how do I structure creative financing on this deal? We need ARV, condition of property, what's owed on what's the existing debt, the monthly payment. Does that include taxes, insurance? If not, what is the taxes and insurance? And what's the motivation of the seller? What do they want? And is it rented? If so, how long and for how much? And if there is debt on the property, what is the interest rate on that debt? What's the maturity date on the loan? Is it fixed or variable? So I know that's kind of a mouthful,
wow.
But I wanted to include all that because we're offering this number for people to call in. So again, that's 877-409-8090, 877-409-8090. Jeff, any last words?
So just two things really quick. I know we're running late, but let us know what kind of topics, what do you want to talk about? I'm happy to do it. And we have plenty to talk about, but I want to do what would help the most people. So any suggestions, we're certainly open for. And second, one of the things all of you should understand that terms or owner financing or lease options, creative financing, opens so many more doors for you. I mean, we're at a time right now where competition may be an all-time high. More and more people are trying to get into the real estate arena.
They're competing. There's so much education out there.
There's seminars going on every week. There's online seminars. There's physical seminars. There's more meetups and groups and whatever than ever before. And there's a lot of competition. And as a rehabber or a traditional wholesaler, you're all going after the same type of properties, all of them. You're mailing, you're calling, you're whatever it is that you're doing, you're going after the same leads, which I would tell you, that's okay. That works still, but it's going to frustrate you, especially if you're new. Actually, even if you're not new, you better be working on expanding that marketing budget. But by doing owner finance and understand how it works, you can open up new leads, new prospects, people that aren't getting not as competitive, maybe not at all.
More profits.
Yeah. So I hope that helps. This is something that we're hoping that really goes and grows and allows us to help influence and impact people's lives. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Great. Thanks, Jeff, so much. Throughout these two episodes, episode 9 and 10 here, you've offered so much valuable information. You've dropped so many gold nuggets here. So thank you. And again, guys, let us know what you want to learn, your questions. The number is 877-409-8090, 877-409-8090. And the last thing I would want to say is if you're trying to reach us, we do have our website up just where our podcast is hosted. And that is www.thecreativefinancingpodcast, just as it's spelled, thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.